to CYC Podcast, Discussions on Child and Youth Care, episode number 106. I'm Wolfgang Vachon. We're continuing uploading our presentations of the Ontario Association of Child and Youth Care Conference, which took place in June of 2017. Today's episode is called Walking the Path Towards Meaningful Youth Engagement. This presentation is by two young people who lived in residential care, Camille and Charles, and three Ryerson University Masters in Child and Youth Care students, Joe, Amanda, and Christopher. The following is a short excerpt from their conference abstract. Current initiatives for youth engagement are often limited through tokenistic and outdated approaches that result in young people continuing to feel as though they are not heard and do not have control over their lives. This presentation will focus on the role of CYC practitioners to support and partner with young people to elevate their voices and participation in the care and services they receive. I hope you find the presentation as engaging and informative as I did.
Okay, good morning, everyone. We're really excited to be here, and thank you for coming. My name is Mandy. I'm a child and youth care practitioner. I'm a master's student right now at Ryerson, and I've been working in the field for 9 years in residential care. Today, we're here to talk about youth engagement, participation, and voice. And my colleagues, Joe and Chris, will introduce themselves in a second. We were talking about doing a workshop here, and we thought about this topic, and so we're like, well, we can't really talk about it if we're not going to engage youth voice. So that was really important to us. And so from there, we began to think about how can we do that in a way that is meaningful and authentic and respectful of young people. And so we engaged in dialogue and planned to invite some youth to join us as co-presenters, to design this workshop together in participation as equals and collaborators. So we wanted to live and breathe what we're talking about, and that's really important in everything that we do as practitioners. So we're very excited and honored and pleased to have Charlie and Camille join us, and they'll introduce themselves to you.
So my name is Charlie. The reason I got on board with this is through my experience in the group homes, I felt very marginalized and very silent. And my hope in doing this is I want to be the person who can give back to specifically my fellow trans community members and my fellow, you know, anyone who does not fit in that gender box, and say that at least one person can make a difference for you and one person can help you get your voice heard.
Hi, my name is Camille, and I came on board with this presentation because through my experiences, I felt like so many of us have fought so hard to have our voices heard when in reality, a lot of our testimonies have been dissected and pulled apart, so then only what's good is reflected. And I want that to change, so then all of it, even the hard, ugly stuff, is presented, so we have a better and clearer picture of what's really going on with the system.
So my name's Joe, and youth engagement for me is really about trying to equalize that power imbalance between young people and practitioners. I feel youth engagement really needs to be young person-led. We need to be going to where they hang out, doing activities they enjoy doing. And through this, conversations and relationships can start to build.
I also echo the sentiment of Joe in that we need to sort of acknowledge that we do have a power over a relationship, no matter what, no matter how we conduct ourselves, really. But it's about working alongside, working with, so that we can balance that out. Sorry, I should introduce myself as well. I'm Chris. I'm also one of the master students from Ryerson, just like Mandy and Joe here. Yeah.
So, why is this important? You've already heard quite a really meaningful explanation on why it's important. I think there's so much we can say about this, and we can't cover it all in 90 minutes. That's absolutely impossible. But when we're thinking about the field right now and all of the transformations, all the changes in child welfare and children's mental health and youth justice, everything's up in the air. And right now is an opportune time. And young people are really raising their voices and really getting engaged and really pushing for meaningful change. And it's this at this point in time where their voices need to be guiding the decisions and the changes that we're making. And so across the hall, we've got PC. They're doing a presentation over there, the Provincial Advocates for Children and Youth. And they have informed, and their reports and the research and the voices of young people have informed my practice and have informed this presentation. But they're really advocating. So if you don't know about the Youth Leading Care hearings, do people know about that? A lot of people do, some people don't. You're going to learn about it, and you're going to have a takeaway, and you're going to dig into it and really know what young people are saying and what they're talking about. So in 2012, there was youth care leading hearings, and there was hundreds of youth gathered together to speak about their experiences in care and talk about what needs to change. And from that, there was a working group, and young people have continued to be engaged to continue to inform the changes in legislation. So the Child and Family Services Act is being changed right now, Bill 89. You need to know about that so you can talk about it with your young people. In our presentation, I got to talk, and they had no idea that this change is happening and it has major impacts, right? So we need to be knowing what's going on in the system so that we can engage young people and they can be involved in that. And with children's mental health, lots of changes, the lead agencies now, and all these different transformations. So young people's voice needs to be leading the way.
And so, as we all know, the UNCRC is something that Canada has adopted and ratified. However, as we all know, and as we see throughout a lot of these reports that are youth-driven, a lot of the various tenets within the UNCRC are not really followed as well as they should be. So we have this awesome document, this awesome sort of guide to respect children's rights and human rights, because children's rights are human rights. And it's not being employed to the best and fullest extent that it can be.
So anytime you read and learn and engage about children's voice and participation, the Article 12 and 13 pop up, talking specifically about how their voice needs to be informing the decisions that are made about them in their lives and in society as well. So what I wanted to do right now is actually engage you and connect you to the My Real Life book. So this is the report that came out from the youth and care hearings. And on your places, your tables where you're at, there's a number and a sentence or a structure there. If you're number one, I want you to just go around number one, two, and I want you to read it out and shout out what these are the main themes that youth have shared with us. So I want you to read it out and shout out what they've been saying. We can just go around from one to six. So whoever's got one, take it away.
So it says, we are vulnerable.
Number two says, we are isolated.
Number three says, we are left out of our lives.
Number four is, no one is really there for us.
Number five, care is unpredictable.
Number six, care ends and we struggle.
So I'm glad that somebody mentioned number six, because that is a personal struggle that I'm going through right now. I recently moved out of care, and it's so difficult to go from having that much support and care and love in your life and going to this place of loneliness, because sometimes it does feel like you're abandoned because staff has a responsibility to their youth that are still living in the residence. So what's left for the youth who move out? Of course, they try their best to be there, but I mean, when you move out, there's an expectation to grow up. But we've already grown up so much. It's hard to keep growing up and to keep going forward when sometimes all we want is to go to an adult and have them be that instead of us sometimes.
Another big piece of that that ties into every one of these is, for us, it's a constant lose-lose situation. If we go to a staff and if we don't go with the absolute perfect tone of voice or the perfect wording, we're not going to be heard. If we yell, they won't listen. If we don't talk quiet enough, they won't listen. If we don't say, hey man, you need to listen to me, then our voices will not be heard. I've been in a situation where I've gone into crisis and I've said, I need to talk. And I've been told, you need to wait until I damn near broke a table by pounding my fist on it saying, you need to listen to me, just in order to get my voice heard.
And going off of what Charlie just said, there is this overwhelming sense of frustration and lack of trust, because why do we even need to yell and to get angry? Why do we have to demand for someone to listen to us? Why does it have to come to that point? It should be there when we need it. It shouldn't have to get to that point where we are going into a crisis. We're going into this scary situation when our living situations are already dangerous or unpredictable. It's
the next biggest thing that ties into everything I've said so far is every single person in this room has basic needs. The difference is, without making assumptions, every single one of you can go out and if you need body wash, you can walk into a store and you can pick that up. Or if you need to go out and get new pants, you can go to a store and you can pick that up. We depend on every single person that works with us to meet our basic needs, but our basic needs are being met with complete and utter bullshit. And it should not take us going to staff 5, 6, 7, 8 times saying, I have no clothes, I have no shoes, I have no hygiene products. It should not take someone who is transgendered saying to you, I need a binder, or I need you to take me to my appointment for my testosterone injections. Someone who is transgendered needs their injection every week or bi-weekly in order for their system to stay regulated. And it should not take us saying, we need you to do this, because 9 times out of 10, our only support are the very people sitting in this room. We don't have anybody else, and we should not be met with bullshit, and it should not come down to, well, if you don't have some kind of support coming in, or if you don't have insurance, or if you don't have your parents' insurance, then we cannot pay for that. We don't have anybody. When I came out, I lost everybody, and my only support are 2 of the very people sitting in this room. At the end of the day, you are our supports, and it should not be met with bullshit.
And finally, to add to that, I just want to say that the participation that we're allowed to be included in is often not enough. Like I mentioned before, what we're able to say is usually torn apart and dissected, and only the good things are taken out, because who wants to hear all that ugly stuff? Who wants to hear some of that? No one. Nobody. We want to feel good. We want to know that we're making a difference, but I want to ask everybody here, are we really, if we're doing that to these young people, that we're actively training to help and to support, are we?
The final piece that I have to say about all of this is the decisions that are being made, they're being made without us. They're being made because it's believed you know what's better. But nobody knows what's better for us than us. And we've all been put in situations, whether you've grown up with your parents, you've grown up with a guardian, you've grown up in the system. Everybody knows what it's like to be told, I know better than you do. And when you're in a situation where you've had to raise yourself or you're having to be raised around an inconsistent team of staff, those decisions should be made together and you should not have your voice taken away. So when those decisions come around, it should be a group process where you get to sit in that room and you get to say, I have a voice and my voice matters.
Every time I hear you talk, and in this process, we've had such wonderful dialogue and really talked about that hard stuff and that ugly stuff. And every time it hits me hard, and it's something that you have to like take in and really think about and think about how can I take youth voice forward? How can I bring that into my personal practice, but beyond that, to my colleagues, to the larger picture, to the system, to the BED of the agency, and how can we do that together, right? It's not about taking, a moment of something that a young person has said and saying, well, that's it, let's run with it. It's constantly together and engaging that voice in that process of moving towards change. And as a practitioner, I'm always thinking, how can we elevate youth voice? Sometimes we get stuck in this idea of we don't feel heard in our own agencies or in how we can impact the system, and we think, oh, we've got to advocate for our voice. If we think about it and frame it, we need to elevate youth voice and advocate for their voice, and we do that together, our voices are raised together, right? We will have space for our voice to be heard, but we're doing it together, and we're doing it in a meaningful way. So it's just, every time, it hits home. And so we wanted to dig into some of the really like the reflective piece, the thinking critically about what is it that we're missing? What aren't we doing? And why? What are these barriers? What are the excuses and the rationale and the reasons that we're not engaging youth voice in meaningful ways and transformative ways in our practice? Do you want to take a lead in and engage? We're going to do an exercise together right now.
So what we're going to do is we're going to do this exercise popcorn style, where we're all going to throw out things we think of or ideas we have. And we're just going to do it very freestyle. So, things that come to your mind, the first thing you think of, just throw it out in the room so that nobody feels on the spot or has to throw their hand up. All right, so while you guys are thinking and starting to write some stuff down, we have an objective that we have for today. And this is something that Cam and I thought a lot about, talked about a lot with our group members. And the biggest thing about this objective is we want to challenge every single being in the room, ourselves, you guys, everyone that's in this room, to when you're working with somebody, your colleagues, the youth you work with, your family, anybody that you're with, to truly think about how it is that you see and hear. To truly take that couple of seconds when you're seeing somebody and truly see them. See them for their uniqueness, and when you're hearing what they say, think about, are you hearing them? Are you hearing them to respond? Or are you hearing them to listen? Because at the end of the day, we want to truly be seen, and we want to truly be heard.
And adding on to what Charlie was saying, I just feel like it's so important, especially in this field, to be able to think objectively, to be empathetic, to place yourself in another person's shoes, because everybody here is going to be working with a lot of different youth who come from so many different backgrounds. You're going to see some textbook cases, or you're going to see some radical things that you're not going to understand, that's going to challenge you, that's going to scare you, that's going to make you nervous and hesitant. But I want you to embrace that, and I want you to feel that also, to realize that that young person is also feeling that, probably triple that, quadruple that. So please just remember, be kind, and people are surprising.
And just to finish off, our objective is the two key things to always remember. The first one, what you always learn in school will be beneficial, but textbook is textbook, and real life is real life. And what you learn will always help you, but once you get out there, it is completely different from what you learn. And hands-on will always be so much more beneficial, because what you may do with us is going to be completely different from what you do in class. And the other thing to hold on to and really think about is every single one of us that you work with, at the end of the day, we know when you're in it because you're in it, and we know when you're in it because you're just there.
First, we want to unpack a few of these. We clearly cannot unpack all of them in this space, but what we hope too is that when you walk away from this room, you begin to unpack it within yourself and wherever you are, within the classroom, the workplace, that you take it with you and you unpack it together and with other people who aren't in this room, right, taking it forward. So I think there's a couple we want to dive into and unpack a little bit, and this is for that.
So the first barrier that we really wanted to look at was taking pride in advocating for us, but then failing to help advocate within the actual program. So this is a huge one, and I'll speak to myself for this, because I've noticed that there's a lot of times where workers will be like, yeah, I want to advocate for you, I want to do this, but as soon as it comes to having an issue within the house where I've come to someone saying, you know, someone's done something transphobic, or somebody's outed me, or, you know, anything to do with something within the house, there's no advocacy. There's no, how can we help you get around this? How can we make this a safer place? Or in one instance, there was a staff who really turned around and said, you know what, we're going to be getting rid of you anyway, so I'm not going to learn your name or pronoun. Where is the advocacy? Where is the, I'm going to treat you like a human, I'm going to honor you? If you're going to advocate for somebody you're working with, there needs to be the full 360 degree, I will advocate for you, I will fight for you, I will honor you as a human, regardless of how you identify, regardless of what my views and my beliefs are. There should be that, I honor your right to think and feel as you do, even if I don't agree. That's how it should be straight across the board.
Charlie, this is like, how does somebody who says that to you keep their job, from your view? How do they keep their job?
My problem was that when I first went into care, I came from a situation where I spent 17 years not having a voice. And that being said to me was another situation where I'm a guy who's not allowed to have a voice.
But that person who said that to you, how do they keep their job, from your point of view?
I never spoke up, and I feel if she had said anything like that to another youth, they probably never spoke up either. And although now this staff has come back to me in recent years and has apologized, this is still something that I have since then gone to management of this place and said, you know what, this was said to me and it was not okay. But it is still something that management of these places will not know this is going on unless we are told that it's okay to use our voice.
And to respond to that too, I think that a lot of the time when it comes to issues around diversity, we're so quick to be like, we're not there yet and you have to wait. And we haven't yet prioritized marginalized communities enough that I think that there's an awareness around management that this is not okay and it's not acceptable. I feel like management is always like, well, it's an educational problem. They don't actually mean that. And these issues aren't ever taken as seriously as they're experienced by the people in those communities who are actually affected by them.
That is basically the exact answer I was given when I've approached management about comments that I've said or things that I have faced.
Can I jump in on this?
Yeah.
So I'm also intrigued, you know, you said, Charlie, you owned it, right? You said, I didn't speak up, which puts the responsibility back on you, right? So you've been abused, and you've been dismissed, and you are saying, you know, had I spoken, maybe something would be different. Except for me, that there seems to be a complete failure on our part, that we're saying you have to, right? So
yeah.
If we go to your, you know, our platter there, you know, where... How are we requiring you as opposed to us saying,
yeah.
You know, this is happening? And so I'm curious around, you know, the mechanisms that I've been that can take place. I've been having conversations with shelter staff and people from the trans community who've experienced shelters. And every single trans person I know talks about sexual assault and sexual harassment in the shelter system that they've experienced or friends have experienced. And none of the shelter staff would say that it happens. They'll say, well, you know, probably does. It happens everywhere, but, you know. But it's clearly happening.
Yeah.
And the response is, well, I don't feel safe to disclose this, right? And so how do we, and I don't know that, you know, hopefully we have the answers in this room, but how do we ensure that it's not up to the people who have experienced the abuse or the harassment to come forward?
Basically, how I've experienced it is, unless you are someone who is not out and is extremely passable, until times really change where everyone has this education, everybody is as gung-ho about you're honored as a person, whatever you identify as does not matter, this will keep happening. People will not come forward. People will not say, this is what I'm experiencing and this needs to change. Until you're accepted for being a freaking purple elephant, for God's sakes. Like, it's gonna happen. I mean, I've gone through sexual assault living in a transitional house and no one did anything. This is just how our system works because people don't care. I'm not recognized as a human because I don't fit a box. And our system will keep doing this and it will keep doing it until someone turns around and says, you need to honor this person as a human, and you need to do it or you will lose your job.
Our practice, like, we had a really good discussion in the planning, and we talked about how, like, our practice and the way that we approach young people and expect them to be accountable for their behaviors, but we don't include them in any decision-making process. So they don't learn. We don't allow them to have any control and say in how they make decisions, what happens in their life within the environment that we're working with, it's so controlled. Yet, we're going to blame you and punish you and shame you when you behave in an unacceptable way. And that really diminishes the voice. It's like, it just crushes it. How can you? Where is there space to have voice when you do anything, you're blamed for it, but when you try to have voice, it's not used. Shay?
Yeah, and I think on top of that too, the structures that we have within the systems for young people to have voice are so far removed from that day-to-day reality that it's like, well, you might get invited to a plan of care meeting, or you might get involved in an initiative at the advocate's office, but they're so far removed from that, like, day-to-day system where you get to practice those little experiences in making voice, or in having voice, and in being able to speak for yourself, that it's too intimidating at that point to be able to speak up because you haven't had that experience of in like day-to-day life, having what you have to say be heard and be respected, but then how are you supposed to do it in an environment where the stakes are 10 times higher and where it's, you know, 10 times more intimidating if you haven't had those developmental experiences to be able to prepare you to be able to participate in those experiences?
Thank you.
And I would say beyond not having the experience, it's getting shut down so that you know, when you say, "God damn it, listen to me," you're punished, right? So we say we want youth voice, yet when there is any youth voice, when someone says no, we take them off program, right? So we teach them to, you know, we teach you to be, you know, docile and obedient, and then we say, you know, well, you didn't come to us, you didn't tell us that you were being abused. Because every time I say you're abusing me, I get stuck in my room with someone who's sexually harassing me. And so, you know, those mechanisms as well, right? And how do we, you know, how do we define youth voice so that when someone gives us the finger, can we applaud it and say, oh yes, awesome, you're the one who's gonna be able to, when somebody's harassing you or, you know, making racist comments or homophobic, transphobic, sexist comments, you're the one who's gonna be able to stand up and bring that forward.
And I'd like to say that sometimes we don't even know that we have a voice. So the system, a lot of the time, feels like, or is geared towards quashing our voices. When you grow up in the system, as I have, it's hard because all of these adults come in and out of your lives constantly, and they're the adults. They're the ones that we have to go to. But when we go to them, they tell us stuff. They don't ask us our opinions. They don't ask us how we're feeling. They tell us. There's no room for us to be who we are. There's no room for us to explore. There's no partnership there. It's not like, there's a huge power imbalance because I feel like I'm so little, even when I'm already little. I'm a kid, I'm small. There's that physical feeling, and then there's that emotional feeling, and then there's this adult who puts themselves on this pedestal. The system puts them on this pedestal, and we have to look up at them, like we're worshiping them, because I guess that's how it should be. The system is telling me that's the message I've always gotten. Before I found my voice, I didn't even think to question it, because there was no other way. Everybody else that I grew up with told me there's no point in saying what happened because it's not going to change anyways. It happened to me and look where I am. They punished me. They told me you're a liar. They said all these horrible things to me even though I was the one who took those horrible things. So sometimes, even before we have the chance to get a voice, we need to know that there is that space. We need to know that, yes, we have that power. We need to be given that before there's even any time to practice it.
One of the things that we talked about that you guys really hammered home in our planning was, in order to have voice, to have space to have voice, and if you want to take over, take over.
Sometimes the thing about not just embracing that we have voice and being given a voice is, and this was a huge thing for me, is sometimes when we don't have a voice at all, is that's the time for you guys to check in and see, do you need me to be your voice? And really have that conversation of, you know, my example is when I came out to my birth mother, and she and I basically had World War III and just said, I want nothing more to do with you, to leave it at that. And I, can I say it?
Yeah.
And I had to look at Mandy after her literally holding me for probably almost 2 hours while I just cried. And that was the point where Mandy said, if you need me to be your voice and help you talk this out. And Mandy actually had a conversation with my mother. And we had dialogue around, what do you want me to say? What do you not want me to say? And if she asks questions, what kind of questions should I answer? What kind of questions should I not answer? that is an example of understanding if there's a situation and we can't talk or we don't know how, it gives us so much more power knowing that we have at least one person who can work with us and understand that in that moment where we feel like we have absolutely nothing left, there's that one person who will fight, and that person can be our voice and help us remember how to get our voice back.
I think you bring up a great point, because Mandy like asked you if she can be your voice, where I feel a lot of the time we just assume that we should be the voice of young people, and we might not be necessarily representing them appropriately. This is extremely prevalent also in the youth justice system, where we actually encourage youth to not say anything. The lawyer will talk.
Yeah.
And this is where restorative justice really comes in and encourages youth participation, youth voice, for them to speak for themselves, advocate for themselves. And if we can assist you and be advocates to young people, we should first ask them and make sure we're on the same page.
Is there any others I think we want to start to dive into brainstorming? What do we do with all these barriers? But I want to make sure we didn't miss anything that was really important to you guys.
There's one. This is another huge piece that ties into us really having a voice. And this was huge for me when I was learning how to actually ask for what I needed. Often when we see that someone is struggling to speak, we kind of say, is this what you're trying to say, or is this what you're trying to get across? I'm someone who has not only mental health, but I have a learning disability and a speech impediment. There's very few people in life that I've ever given the permission to say, if you see me struggling on a word, or if you see me struggling with a sentence, and you know where it is I'm going, have permission to say, is this the word that you're looking for? It is imperative, like completely fucking imperative. If you are working with someone and you see they're getting frustrated, or you see they're getting upset and they're struggling, or they're starting to stumble with their words, you do not interrupt them. You do not cut across them. You do not start to interject your opinion. If they go silent, you do not say a freaking word until they say you can talk, or they give you some kind of acknowledgement that now it is your time to speak. I have been in countless situations where I have been cut across, interrupted. I know a lot of people who get into that position where they are trying to convey something to you. Many of us get into that position where we are trying to say, you know what, hey Mandy, this is what I'm trying to get across to you. And it gets interrupted. Nobody in this room likes to be interrupted. Nobody likes when they're trying to have a conversation, or they're trying to tell a story, or they're trying to tell you something exciting, or they're trying to tell you that their freaking cat just died and you cut across them. Because that feels like shit, and you feel like all your power and your voice just got taken away, and you don't want to talk to that person anymore. That is how we feel every single time that you start to cut across us. Or you start to say, you know what, this is how it has to go, or this is how it has to be. Because every time that somebody new comes in and you say, this is who your new primary worker is going to be, or you say that, well, I'm sorry, but you got to pack up and move to this place, or anytime anything happens, we go immediately back into that tiny little ball and we shut down. And our voice is gone again, and we have to begin that process all over again of trying to learn how to reuse it. And it always starts immediately with that little interruption, because we now feel like we don't have a rapport with you again, because you've just forgotten. The key thing is not to interrupt when we start to struggle.
I just want to add that everybody here, we lean on you guys, because you're people who we go to, who we can trust with things that maybe we've never told anybody else, with things that are scary, with things that are momentous, that are life-changing. And you have to know that that's big for us. A lot of for a big part of our lives. A lot of the adults in our lives have disappointed us, have not been there for us, have abandoned us, have made promises that they can't keep, and who keep doing those things, who are not consistent. So I just want you guys to know that being there is what counts. Listening to us is what matters, because we need you there, because we've done enough growing up. Sometimes we just want to give the reins to somebody else for just a moment while we compose ourselves, and we can get back to that steady place in our lives, because it's too much sometimes to be living on your own, to be paying your bills on time, to be going to school, to be working, to be volunteering. So I know everybody here has had to go through a big part of their lives like that. It's a lot to take in. Imagine doing that when you're 15, 16, 17. You're young. You shouldn't have to be doing that. So remember that, and remember that we don't always have to be adults. We shouldn't even be adults in the first place that young, but just know that sometimes we need you to be that steady place when we're sliding and we're slipping and we feel like we're falling down that rabbit hole again. We cannot be stuck in that darkness, or else maybe it'll be that one time that we can't get out of that rabbit hole again.
You've got a lot to work with, and a lot to think about, to sit with, and then to run with. And we had so many barriers, and I know there was more that people had. We have more. I got a whole list in front of me. And it's thinking critically about, what do we do? What can we do? Where can we find the space and that wiggle room around it? Where can we push, cut that red tape, push against those walls, and really, really do take action. It's all about action. Doing something different. And sometimes that's thinking different about how we think about young people and their capacities and their abilities. And so what are we going to do differently? How are we going to think differently so that we can push these barriers away and push them down and cut them up? So that brings us into engaging in conversation now around what are some of the things that we do, can do, want to do to kind of challenge these things that we've talked about. I think one of the things about this process is that I've experienced is we're much more open to hear the difficult messages from young people that we don't have a personal relationship with. So I've worked with these young, like I've worked with Charlie and I've worked with Camille. We have a relationship, and they're telling me things that I didn't do very well and that I missed out on, and I did not meet those needs, and I have to hear those messages. And that dynamic, so bringing in a workshop is great, but how in your workplace can you sit at the table with the young people in your space and engage in that conversation? All of our meetings and plannings and strategies, it's staff talk and then young people talk. We might have a staff come and lead that house meeting. I'm going to get Camille ran up on this one. That house meeting, and this is where youth have voice. This is when they get to say what should happen. Staff aren't at that table. There's not a dialogue happening. How can we have those hard conversations with the young people we work with? Hear those messages so that we can think and do differently.
I just want to chime in on that real quick. So about that feedback piece, and yes, I know, sorry. About that feedback piece, I know it's really important that we do fully listen, like engage in that active listening, and then don't fire back. Because a lot of the time, the knee-jerk reaction is to justify why you did something. It's not important to justify. It doesn't serve any purpose to justify why you did anything. In fact, it's very detrimental and very harmful to do so.
I think that as practitioners too, we have to learn how to let go of guilt a little bit and be able to respond from places of humility, because we get very stuck in our own egos, and we have to remember that it's not about us, and we get caught in this, but I'm a good person, I had the best of intentions, I didn't mean to do all these things, and I think that it's hard to put ourselves in the position of doing this work if it's not coming from this place of, but I'm a good person, I want to help people, and so I think it makes people very defensive to have to sit at a table and hear, fuck, I screwed up. And we have to be able to make environments that are safe for practitioners to do that, where screwing up is an okay part of the process, so long as that screw up doesn't actually hurt someone else. Like, it can't be, we can't have the response of, oh, I didn't know how to respond to someone who was trans, so I said this really horrible thing and managed to keep my job because I didn't know, but I'm still a good person. So it can't be used in that way, but it has to be able to be used in a way that actually supports, like, legitimate, real, honest learning so that we can move past that. But the only way that we can do that is if we can help teach practitioners and incoming practitioners how to have humility in their work, which is such a hard skill to develop.
Yeah, we talked a lot about that one, didn't we?
And it also depends, who's at these staff meetings too. If you're just talking to the person who's constantly ignoring your needs, and there's no directors, CEOs sitting at the table, then it kind of falls on deaf ears.
So I'm actually going to touch on a couple of the points that have just been made, just because this is a really huge thing for me. So I'm going to touch on yours first, actually. So a huge thing for us is transparency. If you are working long hours during the week, you've got a bunch of residents, which, I mean, the place that that we were in working with Mandy had 12 residents. So we totally understand if you say to us, you know what, I don't have time right now, but I will make time for you. So be open and be honest. If you're just upfront with us and you say, you know what, my shift is only this amount of hours today, but let me actually try and plan a one-to-one with you. And you actually set that up. And you follow through with that. Follow through is the fucking key. If you say to us that you're gonna do something, follow through. We will never get mad at you if you say to us, I do not have time. The only time we will get mad is if you don't recognize we're coming to you because we are in crisis or we are having a serious problem. But we will always seek somebody else out because we do understand that 9 times out of 10, you are not the only person on shift. We may seek you out specifically if you are the one that we have the best rapport with, but we will always go and find somebody else if there is something that's not imminent in that moment. The next thing I wanted to touch on is your humility piece. When we bring you something, you know, harder feedback, the reason that we're doing it is because we want to keep building our rapport. We want to keep building that relationship. So we're telling you something because it did bug us, but we like you enough to say, you know what, this bugged me, but it doesn't bug me enough to say, you know what, I want you out of my life. When we're working with you, we want to work with you because we want to see your humanity. We want to see you vulnerable. We want to see that you actually feel something. We don't want to see you stony face. We don't want to see you just there like, yeah, I'm here, I'm going through my day, I'm going through my shit, and leave. We want to know that if I come to you and I tell you that, you know, one of the hardest parts of my story, I don't want to just see you there like, yep, okay. Because I've seen that. I've seen staff do that. Shit, I've seen a staff where I've burst out crying and she just freezes, looks completely mortified, and had to go get Mandy to come into the room because Mandy was the only one that could calm me down at the time because she had no idea what to do. We don't want to see that either. We want to know that you are in it with us. We want to know that you are going to ride that bus with us to the end. And we want to know the same thing. We want to know if we've done something to hurt you or if we've done something that was not okay or we've crossed a boundary. We want you to be able to sit down with us and say, you know what? What you did or what you said was not okay. And talk that out with us. There's reciprocity in every relationship. So So it's always a two-way street. We want to see your humanity, and we want you to see ours. So everything we go through together is together. There's humanity both ways.
I was just going to add that sometimes if you don't know what to do, it's okay to say that. Because you don't always have to have the answers. I don't always have the answers. I don't want to, because that's how I learn. That's how I'm being vulnerable. That's how I'm owning my feelings. Just like you should be owning the fact that, this is something I've never come across, or this is something that makes me uncomfortable. This is something that is kind of making me freak out. And I want to see that, because at least you're being honest. At least you're not giving me this textbook answer that makes me feel like you weren't actually listening. You were just looking for the out that lets you walk away and leave me in that space alone again. So just know that being honest is really the best policy.
Just to add into that, if we bring you something, and I'll use myself as an example here just because it is a very good example. If I bring you, say, the fact that I want to do a Trans 101 workshop, don't shoot that down. That's a youth getting excited about, I want everybody here to learn about, my identity and how to be with that and get the education around that. And the example is, I brought that idea to my staff team. I planned it, I got the coordinator from Sherburn, everything. And they asked me why we needed to do it. They don't see the specific person wasn't there 9 to 5 every day, wasn't there 3 to 11 every day, wasn't there the overnight. They don't see what goes on when staff aren't around. If we bring you an idea, if we bring you something we're excited about, if we tell you that there's part of our cultural ethnicity that we want to have in the house, do not shoot it down. Do not just say, yeah, I'll look into it, and then never get back to us on it. If we tell you that this is something we want, or if we tell you that this is something that really means something to us, and if you just don't have the education around it, then say flat out, I don't know a lot about this, but I will go, I will do my research, and I will get back to you. Like Cam said, be upfront and be honest. And just tell us. We will go do our reading, and we will get back to you. Or sometimes just ask. Just ask us, do you want to do the research with me? Or what do you know about it? Engage us in our happy places. And yeah. We will be so much happier with you. That is how you build the connections.
Just talking about education brought something up for me around youth voice is thinking about the spaces in which we invite youth voice into and how we control that and how we have power and control over that, right? And where is youth voice in our education, right? Where are all these youth, the two that are standing here with us today, where are they in our curriculum informing what are we teaching, right? We're running away here with taking some very powerful messages. Those messages need to be taught within the classroom from the perspective of young people's lived realities. And, I was very privileged, lucky to teach a course, TA a course in the master's program. And I brought young people from the residence into my classroom to teach my first year students, what is a good child and youth care worker? And anything I taught that semester, nothing resonated more and had more impact than the young people speaking from their lived experience, what is a good child youth care worker? And those people who are in that classroom, they get to take that away. That's a small percentage of the child and youth care workers that we're sending out into the field.
I think about, you know, one of the questions that Kiaris and Ben raised in one of their editorials that they wrote about who are the young people that we give to have voice, and how are we seeing voice as a privilege that we give, you know, the compliant young people as opposed to the young people who we most need to be hearing from, and how are we incorporating those voices in the ways that our schools operate? How are we incorporating those voices in the way that we run our professional development conferences and workshops and all of those things? Like, it seems like, aside from the fact that we work with young people day in and day out, we're never actually expected to, like, engage with young people or talk to young people or hear from young people. And there is such a culture of, like, adults as the transmitters of knowledge that we forget that young people have such incredible things and that we should be doing absolutely everything that we can to hear from them as much as we can.
So I'm just looking at our time. We don't have enough time, I'm just saying. we're at 13 minutes and we could, like, be here all day together. I'm just, like, loving the dialogue. What I think I would like to do is acknowledge that Charlie and Camille have a lot more to say and to share, and they are here with us all day, engaging in workshops, connecting, and so I encourage you, if you guys are cool with this, I didn't ask your permission. Maybe I should do that. No, I know they want the, I know they want to be heard, so you kind of have given me permission, right? is to further the dialogue and conversation with them, and to further the dialogue with each other and with others who aren't in this room. Can you go back to that slide, though? Because I didn't speak to this. So I just wanted to give some concrete ways of thinking about how we can engage young people ethically. And so this is the Committee on the Rights of the Child. So young people all over the world coming together to talk about key principles that, and I have a handout with this for you, so you don't gotta write it down. Key principles, and everything we talked about in here fits into one of these. If we think about these when we are engaging with young people and thinking about how they're gonna participate, where is their voice, we have this as our grounding and our footing and everything that we talked about. We can move forward in being ethical with participation. So I just wanted to flag that for you. Another thing that... Are you okay?
Yeah. Sorry, there's
a lot of me. I think what I... If you guys are cool with this, I'm going to move into the final activity because I wanted to put everybody in the room on the spot. Yeah, I was going to do that, but you do it, do that, and then we're going to do our final.
So Cam and I came up with a list of scenarios, and these are real life scenarios. So you'll be getting a takeaway sheet of 5 scenarios that we strongly encourage you guys to take to your team and sit when you guys do a team meeting or whatever it is that you guys do when you have your whole team together, and actually encourage your whole team to sit and think about these, talk them out, talk to them about what you guys learned today, and encourage them to think differently about how you would react to each of these situations.
Thank you. Yeah, so and that handout also has the principles to guide that conversation. They're brilliant, by the way. They're gonna challenge you.
Because of time, did you want to do this scenario, or are we sort of just...
No, we're not going to do the scenario here. Yeah. We've had lots of rich dialogue. Thank you so much. What we want to do is actually, we're now going to do a group reflective piece. What do you think? Big or small? Anyone have any... No, I'm going to go on spot. What do you think?
There's still a lot of people.
Okay. So we're actually all going to kind of stand up, and we can... like move around a little bit so we have space to kind of, we can kind of make a circular ish S. And basically, it's okay. We don't have to have a perfect circle. Just-ish.
I think if it were, we'd
still
be able to see the
interpreter
that's
there. You good?
Yeah.
Okay. So what we're going to do is reflect a piece around Charlie and Camille share with us their objectives in the beginning. And what we really want is for us, each and one of us, to walk away with something we're going to do differently or think differently. And so we've got a ball. We have a huge circle, so this is going to be fun. And we're going to toss it to somebody in the room, make that eye contact so nobody gets it in the face. And when you receive the ball, you're going to share what you're going to do, something you're going to do differently or think differently.
And I would just encourage you guys again, as part of the objective, is to just really remind each other and remind yourselves that whole key piece of really seeing and hearing as part of one of the things to take away from this.
Okay, I'm
gonna
start. Ready?
Sure. Figures. So my thought is about thinking differently. And so what I'm thinking is that Camille and Charles, your words are a gift to me.
Okay, so what I'm gonna do differently is get better at asking young people what they need. That's really important, I think, and I know it's something I really need to work on, so thank you for reminding me that I need to do that.
What I'm gonna try to do differently is just stop worrying about all the paperwork at the end of the day, because really just being in the moment with you guys and hearing you, and not even having words for you, just to be there with you, I think is very important.
For me, I think it's just being okay in the silence. We're always very quick to jump in or answer or come up with a solution, or sometimes we just need to sit with young people.
What I would like to take away from this is after this 90 minutes, I actually have faith that our system can change after the dialogue with each and every one of you in this room. Squirrel?
Grim. For me, what I've taken away from this is that more consistent reminder for myself that it's okay to not have the answer. I just say that I don't know. Because that's something that I've always been uncomfortable with, but it is something I'm working on, so just to keep it in my mind and to be more aware of it and to practice it more often when I really don't have the words or the answer.
Nice. You're ready.
I used to actively ask students for feedback about mid-semester, and then I stopped doing that because it was really uncomfortable to be in a classroom full of people identifying things that I needed to change. And so I'm reimagining how I can actively model that feedback, maybe not in a group, but because my ego is still not there yet, fragile it is, but find ways to model one-on-one or small group feedback to show students how do we stay humble and receive to change.
I'm going to start to view anger as a strength.
Nice.
Because we tend to not focus on anger, and we tend to shut it off right away when it happens. But when it does happen, they're really showing us what their strength is.
Okay, it's bouncing away. Okay, to literally just, that it's okay to pause and just fucking listen and to take ownership. So if I do any youth or child wrong, then I want to be able to speak up and be like, you know what, I really effed up there, and like take ownership in what I've done or said. So,
Is there anyone who wants to share? We don't have to throw anyone who wants to share that they haven't shared.
I just want to say thank you guys for coming, and to thank you guys for bringing youth into this and taking that method and teaching us. And I monitor that it's okay not to have the answers, and to share that it's okay that we don't have the answers. And it makes me think about how I can bring that message back to the people that I work with, but in a way that's using your voices and the youth that I work with. How can they share that message with the staff that I work with?
One thing for me that I don't think we said that I think is really important is before I make a decision, whether it's in the moment of an interaction or we're sitting at a team deciding a treatment plan or how we're going to change the program or anything like that, before we make this decision, ask myself, have I asked the young people their perspective? And if I think that way before making any decisions, then I'm going to pause and I'm going to go to the young people. If I've missed that, I'm going to go to them, I'm going to ask them. I'm not going to make this huge plan of what needs to happen without engaging young people. So just take that pause, ask yourself, have I asked the young person, have I asked the young people here what they think about this?
So before everyone heads out, by the way, I'm Caitlin, I'm really sorry I came in late. I'm a student amplifier, so I wanna thank you guys for coming and doing such an awesome job. This was amazing, like so amazing. So if everyone can give them a round of applause.
This concludes this month's episode of CYC Podcast. Tune in next time for more discussions on child and youth care. Subscribe to us on iTunes or Stitcher. Visit us on our website at cycpodcast.org. Follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/cycpodcast.